You are listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, earth, community, economy, all six areas of the healthful living model. And you can read more about that at healthfulliving.org. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist and healthful living advocate with Healthful Living. And I'm in the studio today with my partner and co-host,
Julie Matthews, and I'm a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living.
Well, Julie, here we are in December. It's the end of the year. A lot of reflection going on, a lot of pondering the nature of the universe, and people kind of just taking in a lot of things that are going on in the world. Today we have a bit of an open show. You and I are going to talk about a number of things that are kind of up in the news and in the world. I think there's a lot of belief system shifting going on, a lot of core kind of looking at, you know, what have we thought and known for a long, long time, and what's really the truth. I wanted to talk first about this book that you've recently picked up, because as our listeners know, you and I talk a lot about health subjects here. We speak very much a lot about nutrition and food-related issues, you're mm-hmm. being a nutrition consultant, and we're quite often sharing with our listeners as much truth as we can, and powering information as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a new book that's out. What is
yes,
it called?
Yes, absolutely. It's called Good Calories, Bad Calories, and it's by Gary, how would you pronounce his last name? Taubes?
Taubes.
And it is the subtitle, so it's Good Calories, Bad Calories, Fats, Carbs, and the Controversial Science of Diet and Health. And he is a science writer, and he's a, in his groundbreaking book, he's an award-winning science writer, and he really goes into deep into the history of the science and history of nutrition, which you don't ever really hear about. And it is fascinating because it seriously shapes the science, history of nutrition seriously shapes the science of nutrition, and you never hear about that. The book is really about the science of fats and carbs, but he really explains how this all came about, which scientists came first, what their ideas were. You know, what I found really fascinating is that when you think of science, you think that it is based on scientific study, based mm-hmm. on observation, based on hypothesis, and then based on experimentation. That's what we think of as science.
Right.
However, it's really interesting to realize that scientists are humans, and that humans have a whole set of biases and peer pressure and all sorts of factors that influence the science. So, for example, there were early on some theories about fat and heart disease that shaped the science of nutrition for the last 50 years. And most people don't realize that. And if you think about heart disease, you think of, okay, well, these people have plaque in the arteries, and this plaque, it comes from cholesterol, or there's cholesterol in this plaque, and therefore cholesterol must have a factor, and fat must be a factor, and people that are fat or obese must eat too much fat. So these were some initial basic premises that people started with.
Well, and today, those are pretty pervasive beliefs.
Correct.
Right? I mean, it's written about, it's talked about all throughout society, and there's a, seems to be an aggregate human belief system that eating fat makes you fat.
Yes.
That eating cholesterol clogs your arteries,
mm-hmm.
and that it's bad for you. I mean, we've mm-hmm. had this message jammed into our subconscious by so many different avenues.
Yeah, not even just subconscious. It's been, it is the prevailing science. And so, you know, it goes back to explain that back 50, 100 years ago, at a variety of different times throughout history, people thought, and mostly about 50 years ago, people felt like there was one man, Ansel Keys, and Dr. Keys really felt that, oh, well, heart disease and this plaque must have something to do with eating too much fat and eating too much cholesterol. He just kind of made that assumption. He thought, okay, well, Americans must be eating too much fat and cholesterol, and this must be why they've got heart disease. It seemed reasonable, if you think about it. And so he went with this premise, and then when he studied total cholesterol, he didn't really find the big change that he thought he was going to see. There was a slight increase in total cholesterol based on eating higher fat and higher cholesterol foods. And from that little bit, he then blew up this theory and said, okay, this theory is correct. But interestingly, every time any science or research that he did was counter to what he believed and this hypothesis he set up, he completely ignored that science.
Right.
Because for him, it didn't fit with what he believed. Therefore, it had to be accounted for by something else. There was something else going on. There was some other way to explain it away. And so that was the beginning. And once that, what seemed like a common sense basic belief was established, and this science seemed to more or less support it, that was the prevailing belief of the day. And anybody that came along with different science was seen as a quack. They were discredited. They were laughed at. So nobody came forward. And the people that did come forward, their research was sloughed aside because people just said, you know, this isn't true. This isn't correct. We think we already know what's going on. So if your science doesn't fit into our science, then yours has to be incorrect. And so from the beginning, they showed there were a lot of scientists, or several, I guess, the scientists that showed that that their science was incorrect. But it was never allowed to be discussed or brought forward. So still to this day, we have highly inaccurate information of what's going on. And I can go into some of that.
Because it conflicts with the original notion. With the original belief.
With the original notion and... Interestingly, all the people will say, oh, well, it's conclusive now. We've done dozens and dozens of studies. But you know what? You'd be surprised. None of those studies show conclusively what people say over and over, which is that fat, and especially saturated fat, causes heart disease. That is the prevailing belief, mm-hmm. and it's incorrect.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so here's just a little bit of information that he talks about. Now, his book is, let me see here, over 500 pages, and it is, there's actually, I guess it's about 268 pages of text, and there is over 100 pages of scientific references. So this is a highly scientific referenced book. He describes in the afterword that he had no belief to start with. He wasn't out to prove his point. He didn't have necessarily a point that he knew of. He learned all of this based on research and science that he did. And actually, I can actually, if I go to it, read some of the things he summarizes in the afterword, in the epilogue, some of the things that he found. So, as I emerged from this research, though, certain conclusions seemed inescapable to me based on the existing knowledge. Dietary fat, whether saturated or not, is not the cause of obesity, heart disease, or any other chronic disease of civilization. The problem with carbohydrates in the diet, their effect on insulin secretion and thus hormonal regulation homeostasis, the entire harmonic assemblance of the human body, the problem is the carbohydrates in the diet, is what he says, and then he goes on to explain insulin and hormone regulation. The more easily digestible and refined the carbohydrates, the greater the effect on our health, weight, and well-being. Number three is sugars, sucrose, and high fructose corn syrup specifically are particularly harmful, probably because the combination of fructose and glucose simultaneously elevates insulin levels while overloading the liver with carbohydrates. Number four, through their direct effect on insulin and blood sugar, refined carbohydrates, starches, and sugars are the dietary cause of coronary heart disease and diabetes. They are the most likely dietary causes of cancer, Alzheimer's, and the other chronic diseases of civilization. Obesity is not a disorder of excess fat accumulation, nor overeating, and not sedentary behavior. Consuming excess calories does not cause us to grow fatter any more than it can cause a child to grow taller. expending more energy than we consume does not lead to long-term weight loss. It leads to hunger. And then he goes on and goes into fat and hormone regulation. Insulin is the primary regulator of fat storage. When insulin levels are elevated, either chronically or after a meal, we accumulate fat in our fat tissue. When insulin levels fall, we release fat from our fat tissue and use it for food. And he goes on to say, by driving fat accumulation, carbohydrates also increase hunger and decrease the amount of energy we expend in metabolism and physical energy. So basically his theory, information that he concludes based on all of his research is that fat, and particularly saturated fat, are not the causes of heart disease. That actually refined carbohydrates and sugar are the cause of heart disease, as well as refined carbohydrates and sugar are the cause of obesity, diabetes, and all sorts of other things. And he does an amazing job explaining the science. And I just want to talk a little bit about some of the science. So originally when they studied heart disease, they studied total cholesterol levels. Well, now we know that total cholesterol has little, that indicator, that marker has little to do with actually what's going on, because now we know there's high-density lipoprotein. So there's HDL, there's LDL, there's VLDL, there's all these other markers that we now know about, that when all the original science that set the foundation was discussed, they only knew and could only test total cholesterol. And so all their theories were based on a marker that was inaccurate. And so he goes on to explain, quote, dietary cholesterol has an insignificant effect on blood cholesterol. It might elevate cholesterol levels in a small percentage of highly sensitive individuals, but for most of us, it's clinically meaningless. And he does a really good job. He explains a couple, he goes well in detail of explaining that HDL, as we call good cholesterol, actually is protective against heart disease. And most scientists today and doctors know that. Mm-hmm. And they will recommend that you consume oleic acid or olive oil, things that actually raise HDL. And regular science talks about that too. But what they don't talk about is that a majority of animal fat is actually oleic acid. And so animal fat and saturated fat have a very small factor to do with cholesterol. It does slightly raise LDL, but it has all sorts of other effects too. So let me read this to you. There are a lot of other things with LDL as well. There's a variety of densities of regular LDL, and so we can't just say LDL is bad cholesterol. So there's some information there. But let's see, he says, the observation that monounsaturated fats both lower LDL cholesterol and raise HDL cholesterol came with an ironic twist. The principal fat in red meat, eggs, and bacon is not saturated fat, but the very same monounsaturated fat as in olive oil. The implications are almost impossible to believe after 3 decades of public health recommendations suggesting that any red meat consumed should at least be lean with any excess fat removed. He goes on to say, consider a porterhouse steak with a 1/4-inch layer of fat. After broiling this steak will reduce to almost equal parts fat and protein. 51% of the fat is monounsaturated. Did everyone hear that? A majority of the fat is monounsaturated, of which 90% is oleic acid. Saturated fat constitutes 45% of the total fat, but 1/3 of that is stearic acid, which will increase HDL cholesterol while having little effect on LDL. Stearic acid is metabolized in the body to oleic acid, according to Grundy's research. The remaining 4% is polyunsaturated fat, which lowers LDL cholesterol, but has no meaningful effect on HDL. In sum, perhaps as much as 70% of the fat content in a porterhouse steak will improve the relative levels of LDL and HDL cholesterol compared with what they would have been if carbohydrates such as bread, potatoes, and pasta were consumed. The remaining 30% will raise LDL, but also raise HDL, and will have an insignificant effect, if any, on the ratio of total cholesterol to HDL. All of this suggests that eating a porterhouse steak in lieu of bread and potatoes would actually reduce heart disease risk, although virtually no nutritional authority will say so publicly. The same holds true for bacon and lard.
My goodness.
This is
what... The meat eaters in our audience are cheering right now.
The people out there, like the Weston A. Price Organization, that have been talking about this for many, many years... The research that has been done on indigenous tribes, where you look at the amount of saturated fat consumed and the amount of heart disease, all of these facts never made any sense with the model that has been used. And now this man, Taubes goes into a great deal of the science and really explains that saturated fat, especially fat in general, because a lot of people think fat in general is bad, but even saturated fat is not harmful like we once thought it was, and that animal food, animal protein, animal fat is not a harmful substance. In fact, we've been avoiding saturated fat and fat in general and having more carbohydrates, because that's what all of the mainstream nutrition professionals have been saying. But I myself, as a certified nutrition consultant, can say that I've done a lot of research on this and worked with a lot of clients, and I never found that theory of animal fat to be true or to hold up. And I'm so thrilled to see that he wrote this book and really goes through some hard science explaining what is really out there and what's going on. And I can go into carbohydrates in a minute, but I wanted to just start number one with the saturated fat piece, because a lot of people with obesity and type 2 diabetes are told to decrease their fat consumption. But when you decrease your fat consumption, what do you put in its place? Carbohydrates. Mm. We know carbohydrates are bad for diabetes, but yet the Diabetes Association website really marginalizes that information. And the main thing they talk about is the reduction in fat in someone's diet. And as soon as you do that, you increase the carbohydrates and you create more problems. You create more obesity, you create more diabetes, and you create more heart disease. And I'd love to talk a little bit about carbohydrates and high fructose corn syrup, but I don't know if you have any questions.
Well, what's fascinating to me is that he's uncovering here, and again, we're speaking about the book Good Calories, Bad Calories by Gary Taubes, and we'll have to definitely try to connect in with him and see if we can get him on the show, because there's obviously a lot of very, very rich material here. But how he goes back to the antecedents of this belief system,
mm-hmm.
and how, you know, we all know about the power of initial impressions.
Right.
Right? If you have a bad impression of somebody from the onset,
mm-hmm.
and you make that up in your mind, right, for whatever reason, every time after that, you're looking to find out how it is that they're fulfilling your initial negative impression, even if they're showing you great stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's that power here that we're learning, that they initially came up with these studies, this initial research, which wasn't accurate.
Well, even I, who find that I strongly believe what Taubes has been, what he says, and have been saying this myself for years, but I have to say it is difficult, because anytime I talk to a client, I talk to another nutrition professional, I talk to a doctor, somebody that doesn't know this science and goes with the prevailing nutrition mainstream information that's out there, every single person is shocked, surprised, and sometimes if they're open-minded enough, they'll be fascinated and intrigued and listen, but a large percentage of the time, including people in my own family, they completely ignore everything I'm saying because it does not fit into their belief system, and they cannot believe how it could be true. So they can't even hear anything that I'm saying.
Well, it's really difficult for people to have to question what they've believed for so long.
Right.
Or to have to ask themselves the question, where did I get that belief, and is that information that I'm is that solid? Where does it come from? Or am I just going with it because everybody says the same thing?
Right.
You know, I really think we're living in a time where if we look around, we're getting a lot of new information about things that are questioning what we've historically known to be true.
Well, and I think the big challenge is that most people aren't scientists. So if they read the science, the information and the science behind it, I think they feel that the onus would then be on them to make a determination.
Right.
And most people feel uncomfortable overriding the mainstream authorities and go with what they have found to be true because I think they have I think they don't feel confident in their ability to make those determinations. And then you become responsible. So it's so much easier if you have been told for 30 or 40 years that saturated fat and animal fat is bad and you've avoided it. It would be very scary to then say, well, I'm going to, you know, ignore all of that and I'm going to go what I've found to be true because people, that would then put the onus on you. And what if you're wrong? You know, it's easier to go with what everybody else believes and what all the other experts are saying because there's less responsibility placed on yourself if you just go with that.
Well, the interesting thing there, and we've talked about this quite a bit on the show, is that it's really only truly when you fully personally take on that responsibility that you've taken in all the professional information, mm-hmm. whatever it is, and you ingest it, you digest it yourself, and you go with what feels right to you,
right. That
you will truly be getting your outcome, feeling better about whatever it is you're doing, more successful at your achieving what it is. I mean, even just the recent information about the absolute failure of diets, right?
Mm-hmm.
People that go on a diet don't succeed. I mean, we know this over
and actually all the science shows that.
All the science
and
shows.
And yet people still do it. Right. But in the book, actually, he talks a lot about dieting and the diets and why the diets don't work. It's actually a really very good book for anybody interested in information on heart disease, diabetes, obesity, diets, weight loss. All of that information, good calories, bad calories, is a great book.
I want to throw out one quick little thing about fat, because if anybody's been listening to this conversation, we've been tossing the fat word around a lot.
Right.
And just clarify, when we're talking about fat, we're talking about real quality fat.
Yes.
We're not talking about
donuts.
We're not talking about donuts and deep
frying.
Right.
So. We're talking about good fats that are used to line every cell of the body, mm-hmm. that are used for burning for energy, that are used for brain function, mood. So we're talking about omega-3 fats, fish oils. We're talking about monounsaturated fats, olive oil, avocados, things like that, nuts and seeds. We're talking about animal fats, saturated fats.
Lard.
Lard. But we're talking about good quality grass-fed or pasture-raised animal fats. We're not talking about highly processed, you know, commercial,
right.
junky fat. We're talking about unrefined, unprocessed, virgin, extra virgin, grass-fed. We're talking about good quality fats.
Quality human food.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And so, I'll just give a simple example of, because most people think that if I eat fat, I'll get fat because fat, you know, the body fat on your body is fat. So it would sort of make sense that you would think if you eat too much fat, it might make you fat. But I'll give you an example of why that's not true. If you eat 100 calories of fat, see, one of the things is that there's more density in fat. So a smaller amount will have more calories. So if you go by the calorie model, that's one of the reasons people cut down on fats as well. But the calorie model, as Tobbs talks about, is ineffective as well. So let's just say you have 100 calories of fat and you have 100 calories of carbohydrate, let's say bread. The 100 calories of fat, if it's good fat, contains EPA, DHA, CLA. These substances are known to help with fat burning, fat regulation, letting insulin, nutrients, blood sugar in and out of the cell, getting waste out of the cell, having energy to burn. All of these good properties are involved with these fats. And so good fats actually help burn fat. 100 calories of, let's say, bread or sugar is actually going to store fat. because those 100 calories are going to raise insulin levels. Insulin is then going to be is a fat storage hormone. It's actually going to get you to store fat. So the fat, if it's good quality, will burn fat, and the sugar will actually store fat. So even the same 100 calories will function very differently in the body. And these are also things that people don't take into consideration. And there's a great quote in the book from, he's quoting Einstein when he says, make your theories simple, but not overly simple. So in other words, if you overly simplify something, that, of course, if you eat way too many calories, eventually you're going to store some of those excess calories as fat. So there is some truth to that, right? So we want to simplify it to some extent. But if we simplify it too much, that it's all about calories, and we don't take those nuances I just described into consideration, then we're doing a disservice by simplifying something too much. And that's what's been happening when in science we simplify it too much, or in medicine we take the pancreas, and we have a doctor that just studies that, and we have a doctor that just studies the brain, and we have a doctor that just studies the heart. We're simplifying and breaking it down too much that we can't really see what's happening in the whole body itself.
What audiences do you think are really just kind of off the mark now, or being led off the mark by being fixated on low fat?
I think the audience of the entire United States. I mean, what do you anything in particular?
Well, we've had this conversation before. I know you've gotten very triggered when you've seen advertisements like for pregnant moms.
Oh, right,
you know,
right.
Have a low fat this, low fat that, and you know.
Or, well, kind of the other thing. Okay, so good question. So the one thing I get really triggered by is low fat dairy and low fat food for children over the age of two.
Mm.
Two! So you're a child that's 2 years and 1 month old should now be on a low-fat diet? I mean, when you read this book, that's craziness. So I think that's the most harmful to me information. Now, with pregnant women, I don't know how much they talk about low-fat in the mainstream as much, but definitely with the young children, they do. And that I definitely think is a huge disservice to so many kids. You know, since I work with children with nutrition, especially children with autism, I see a lot of – I work with a lot of children, and I think that that is really a disservice to the population.
So how do you think this is going to affect broader perspectives? And then we want to talk about the carbohydrates thing as well.
Yeah, well, I'm encouraged because this is just one of many new pieces of information that's coming out that's really talking about the science of what really is going on with nutrition. So I feel really encouraged that these are not new concepts, and they're getting a lot more attention. And even doctors are talking about that not all fat is bad. So that's a good step. And now, you know, this is just another step to getting more of the real information and helpful information out there. So I'm excited about that. You had asked about carbohydrates,
well, yeah,
the other piece of this puzzle that he talks about.
You know, for those who are concerned, I mean, people are obviously very conscious of their health, and they're learning so much more about diet. Let's talk about this carbohydrate piece of the pie. Piece of the pie.
Yes. Piece of the pie. Is that literal or figurative? Yes. So he talks about two things in the book. One is that fat and saturated fat are not, and animal fat are not the villains that everybody thought. And that actually carbohydrates, particularly refined carbohydrates and sugars, really are a huge detriment. And he goes into great detail why. So I thought I would even out the conversation by explaining that half of it just a little bit more. So there are a couple things. One is that we know when we have too much refined carbohydrate, it turns to sugar, turns to glucose, and that raises blood sugar levels, and therefore the body responds by raising insulin.
So what kind of foods, for example?
So bagels, pretzels, anything made with white flour products.
Mm-hmm.
Even a lot of these starchy things like potatoes and that sort of thing. Going into sugars as well. So cane sugar, table sugar. Most people say, "Oh, I don't eat sugar." But what they're thinking is that they don't put tablespoons of sugar on their food. Mm. They're not thinking of all the sugar that's in their food already, like in the pastry that they're eating, or in the jam that they're having, or the yogurt that they're having. Those kinds of things where there's a lot of sugar. So that's the first part. So when you consume those highly refined sugar and carbohydrate products, it raises blood sugar, which raises insulin, which creates more fat storage, which also over time gets the body resistant to insulin. If you keep pumping it out, then the body becomes, it's kind of like the boy who cried wolf. You know, you keep getting insulin. It's like, well, okay, there's some insulin around, but we're so used to having insulin around, we're not going to really do anything. So then the body needs to pump out more insulin and more insulin to get that same response from the body. And now that high level of insulin is now creating the body's fat storage mode, where now people are gaining weight from all of this, and the pancreas becomes overloaded. And this is where type 2 diabetes can come about, and we get more fat storage. The other thing is that sugar going through the bloodstream starts to damage the arteries. And guess what happens? Cholesterol comes along to protect and to repair the damage to the arteries done by high sugar in the diet. So the high sugar causes the body to create more cholesterol, because actually about 75 to 85% of the cholesterol in our body doesn't come from bacon and things like that and butter. It actually comes from our own liver that makes it. So if we're eating so much sugar, the body's producing more cholesterol, and it's trying to protect us. It's used as a defense mechanism. It's like, I think of it as spackling on the arteries. It's trying to protect the damage that was created by the sugar in the first place. And so this is a great cause of a problem. And I also want to talk a little bit about high fructose corn syrup and fructose in general, because fructose doesn't raise insulin. So people often thought, oh, well, fructose is good. Fructose is okay. But fructose, we now, and particularly high fructose corn syrup, goes to the liver to be processed. And then what happens is triglycerides are raised. And as he talks about in the book, triglycerides are a much bigger indicator of heart disease than cholesterol, than blood cholesterol is. And so now we have some sugar going to the bloodstream and raising glucose and raising insulin. Some sugars, like the high fructose corn syrup that's in sodas, yogurt, most processed foods are, and the lines are kind of ringing here, so maybe we should take some questions at some point. Those are going to go to the liver and raise triglycerides, which is a much bigger indicator for heart disease than the blood cholesterol. And this has been shown by science. So these areas are places that we really need to look into. I want to take a little break, see if we can take a call or two. And then I'd like to go to a little bit to an article that we saw in the New York Times talking about these highly refined foods that we're doing, these high fructose corn syrup products, the increase in the production of corn in agribusiness, and all sorts of things leading to a lot of problems in our overall health. So those of you trying to call just now, you're welcome to call back. We're going to take a break to take your calls at 346-5376. That's 415 area code, or toll free 866-405-0200. You are listening to Julie and Martin Matthews on Reality Sandwich Radio here on KPOO. We will be right back.
Welcome back to Reality Sandwich. Martin Matthews. I'm here today with my co-host, Julie Matthews, and we're speaking about this fascinating new book by Gary Taubes, Good Calories and Bad Calories. We just had a couple of people calling in that are just fascinated, number one, Julie, with this information, and were a little bit overwhelmed as far as coming up with an immediate question. But, you know, this is certainly paradigm busting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we've been sitting with this paradigm for a long, long time that, you know, fat is bad, cholesterol is bad, and now we're really getting to the antecedents of where that belief has come from and realizing
right.
that it's just not totally true.
Right.
And that there's a heck of a lot more data out there to understand about the nature of food itself, our interactions with
right.
food, quality foods,
mm-hmm.
and really how it affects our body and how we should each be living.
Absolutely. And I want people to, if people want some more information, if they go to my website, I'm actually going to be posting some of these articles I've been writing. I wrote a little article on this saturated animal fat piece. And so I would love to give that information for people. So a couple of things. People can go to my website, healthfulliving.org, which is healthfulliving. .org, that's a website about me, my nutrition work, and some information. The next website, while it's technically about my More of my work with autism, it has all of my blog information. So all my latest articles that come out, I post on that website. So if people want, there's actually a lot of good information that's general nutrition related as well as autism and child nutrition related. And that's nourishinghope.com. So if people go to either of those sites, I am going to be posting that article today, the one that I did on saturated and animal fat and other information. And there's all sorts of ways that people can, you know, sign up for the newsletter or get information coming to them if that's also better for them. But I wanted to let people know because, you know, if you're going to, you know, I find that if I go to a holiday party or a family gathering and I'm really, or we went to a party the other night and I told, you know, someone, you know, when they find out I'm a nutrition consultant, they often will say things about animal fat, you know, oh yeah, I don't eat much animal food, and you know, and then they're shocked to find out that I actually think it's a good thing. So I would, you know, think there's if people follow up with some of the things on my website, you can get some more information for you so that when you go to a dinner party or your a family gathering and you're trying to explain to people that have heard for the last 40 years that fat is bad, animal fat is bad, all these things, you can actually have some information that you can actually explain to people. And so that's really the reason that I wanted to get this out there, is because if I find it a difficult conversation with all of my nutrition knowledge, the average person is probably going to be pretty overwhelmed pretty early on when someone starts asking a question or two. How do you refute all that mainstream information? So, I mean, my objective is not to be combative and try to refute everything, but just to give people good science and good information to help support their health and also explain to other people why they might be doing the things that they're doing.
Right, right. And it's always our objective to help empower you, the listener, with information to help you feel good about what you're doing and who you're being and how you're living, and to hopefully not feel like you must have somebody else's corroboration.
Right.
In what you're saying, in order to feel okay about what you've learned and what feels right to you.
Right.
There's this interesting article up in the New York Times by an op-ed columnist there called Nicholas Kristof.
Yes.
And he proposes to Obama, he ponders that if, instead of picking an agricultural secretary, that he should reframe it and rather have the position be called Secretary of Food.
Yes, as opposed to Secretary of Agriculture. I am going to also post a little link on my website to this article I just found. I was on my friend Carla Borelli's blog, Local Forage, and she had found this article this morning. It is really interesting, and it links back to... It links back to what we were just talking about, which is that agribusiness, big business, is all about food subsidies and raising mass monocrop fields of corn and soy. And with the corn, they do they make high fructose corn syrup and all sorts of refined carbohydrate products that lead to this increase in blood sugar and all these other things. And so it really fits what we've been talking about, really fits in line with what he's talking about. And I want to just say one or two things before we quit, because when Obama was elected, you know, I was very excited and very supportive, but you notice I was also hesitant, because the same lobbies that control the Republican Party also control the Democratic Party, and and I was concerned, and I am still concerned, but I think Obama's a good guy, and I think it's important to put pressure on him, because right now he had chosen a name as a possible Secretary of Agriculture, and he got huge negative input because this guy was a Monsanto agribusiness, big business guy, and they pulled his name, but all the other nomination or people that he's put up as possible selections for this position are also big agribusiness people, and it's just going to lead further to the consumption of all of these processed foods, all of these monocrops, all of this agro big business, all of this Monsanto stuff, and right now is our chance to put pressure on Obama that he should, if he really wants change, if he really wants reform, and it's more than just lip service, he really needs to select somebody that is going to not be beholden to those systems. So I'm going to put that up on my site. I'm going to put that up on nourishinghope.com. So if you go there later, you can find out more. But there's a petition that you can sign that's created by some people that are involved in this, and you can read a lot more about this.
I need to get those Monsanto folks out of the government positions. We have a caller.
Oh, great.
Online. She has a quick question. Are you there with us?
Yes, I am. First, I would like to thank you for having such a topic on. I'm actually flabbergasted that this is being spoken about. I was actually talking to my great aunt the other day, and she's like 90 years old, and she was raised on lard, bacon, you know, these sort of foods, and she's perfectly healthy, you know. But the question that I had for you is, I eat, you know, a lot of meat products, a lot of vegetables. Everything I use organic. But, and I myself right now, I'm going through a lot of, like, health issues. But I would like to get your opinion on the correlation between food, or, like, food and disease, but also to stress. You know, how that affects, how that plays out.
Absolutely.
I think that's something that's not being, like, taken into account. They'll just say, like, hey, you have high cholesterol. But, they, like, my aunt, my great aunt, who's 19 years old, she said, she's like, what they're not looking at is, like, she's like saying, I'm 90 years old, you know, and she grew up on fat and stuff, but she was like saying, like, what they're not looking at is how does stress relate to your life, but also to the quality of food that you're taking into your body.
Absolutely. Right. Well, right. I want to firstly thank you so much for calling in and also sharing your experience with your great aunt. And so in our last couple minutes, I'll do my best to answer your question. Thanks for calling.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
All right, bye. So, you know, she had a really good point. And firstly, I'm really glad to hear her experience or her family's experience, because that is so true. And if you look at indigenous cultures, you see the same thing. You know, stress is a huge factor, and we have a lot of it today. But we also had a lot of it a long time ago. And so do we have more stress than we did back then? You know, that I can't say, but I can say that stress does play a role, and that the foods that we eat are either going to support us in times during times of stress or not support us. And so stress affects the adrenals and the endocrine system, and the pancreas is part of the endocrine system. So the more stress we're under, in the old days, if we were under stress, like chased by a tiger, then we would have exercise to exercise off that adrenaline. Today, and the sugar that comes along with that. Today, we don't have that. In the face of stress, we often eat sugar rather than burn sugar. So we have the kind of double negative going along with our modern lifestyle. And so stress is a big factor in health and a big factor in all sorts of conditions. And the food that we eat can either positively or negatively impact that. So I think that's a really good point that she brought up.
Right, right. You know, food is meant to nourish us. It needs to nourish us.
Yes.
And stress, of course, as we've talked quite a bit about in the past, you know, it's an inhibiting factor. It constricts what's going on in the body.
Yes.
And inhibits food digestion, assimilation of nutrients. I mean, all these different factors. So, for sure, huge, huge aspect. But I think one of the biggest, biggest learnings here that we're pulling away from our book is that a lot of these big, big myths are just so unfounded and have been so drastically impacting the collective human psyche for a long, long time. And where's it been getting us?
Right.
You know, look at the rates of heart disease today. Well, look at the rates of obesity today.
That's the other thing, is that you only need to look at the, quote, experiment that's been done in this country for the last 40 years to see that this mainstream nutrition advice is not working. And they blame it on the individual person that, oh, well, they must not really be following the diet. They must be still eating a lot of fat. Well, you know, I guess to some extent there's a lot of junk foods in the diet, but we have shown a decrease in the fat and an increase in the carbs, and look where it's gotten us.
And here's something they don't really point the finger at. How much stress is associated with being on a diet?
Oh, that's a good point.
Right. So the moment that you go onto a diet, you're taking your stress level bammo, and up there, freaking out, trying to get it right.
Because you're starving and you're, you know, and actually Tubbs talks a lot about that, all the different aspects that come into dieting, and it's very, very interesting. So I recommend the book and also do some more research on the subject. But we've been talking about Good Calories, Bad Calories by Gary Tubbs today, and I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living, and I'm here with my co-host,
Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist and stress reducer and Healthful Living advocate with Healthful Living. You can get this show and all past shows of Reality Sandwich as soon as we upload them at realitysandwichradio.com. We'll be back next Thursday with our guest.
We are going to have Dr. Brady on. He is going to be talking all about good health, and he is an amazing physician. So we will be doing that next week.
Thanks for listening.